You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to the program, A Good Book. This is part 10 of the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story, Finding My Birth Parents, Jerry and Joanne Buss. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and I am also the author of the book. This is the true story of finding my birth parents after years of fruitless searching, only to discover that I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss, the multimillionaire legendary owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and his wife, Joanne. On the previous broadcast, we learned about leaving the corporate world and starting my own company in the year 2000, also my time of volunteering with Sun Sounds, and unfortunately, the loss of my dear Uncle George and my mom, Maddie. We begin this reading with part 2 of the book, chapter 10. You're on your own, kid. Our tears prepare the ground for our future growth. Julia Cameron. Even if you are classified as an adult, when you lose your last parent, your childhood officially ends. There's no way to go back. No more questions, no more answers. Mom would say that when a loved one dies, you can be prepared, but you are never ready. The year after Mom died, my 30-year marriage came to an end. Paul wanted to move to the Great Smoky Mountains to experience the change of seasons, similar to what he had enjoyed as a child in Chicago. And with Scott no longer living in Arizona, our empty nest had an effect on him as well. He tried to convince me to come along, but I could not bring myself to do it. We had lived in Arizona continuously for over 20 years, but depending on your perspective, the desert is either harsh or healing. Our friends were shocked, and we were too, but we let go of each other gracefully. As time went by, I was able to sum up our disillusion in one sentence. He wasn't committed enough to the marriage to stay, and I wasn't committed enough to go. When I called our insurance agent of 30 years to explain the situation, he said, rather than call it a tragedy, he preferred to see it as a love story. Paul remarried, and fortunately, we have remained friends. Our marriage was now just a memory. In fact, my whole life was beginning to feel like a memory. You spend the first half of your life creating memories and the second half trying to make sense of them all. My Arizona taproot had grown stronger and deeper over the years. As a child, moving was an adventure, but as an adult, it felt more like a nightmare. Just thinking about geographical change made me uneasy. I dug in while everyone I had ever loved either died or moved away. Whenever one of her friends was going through a divorce, Mom would try to ease their sadness by saying, "Sometimes people are like two ships passing in the night, each guiding the other on the path, but only for so long." I imagine she would have said that to me as well. For years, I had a plaque on my desk with the quote, "Love many, trust few, and always paddle your own canoe." This became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Preferring to be in control of my fate, I came to the realization that the little girl with the big brown eyes who always wanted family suddenly had none within 1,000 miles. For the first time in my life, I was living alone in Arizona. No parents, no sister, no spouse, no child. And my dear friend Anne had passed away after her cancer returned with a vengeance. What kept me going during this time was business, volunteering, and friends. Solitude was good for me too, even if I didn't agree with myself most of the time. I journaled. I read autobiographies of women I admired. I went to spiritual retreats. I played the piano until midnight with no one around to hear my mistakes. I arranged and rearranged the furniture. Distractions were good too. I poured myself into my work. I attended concerts and operas. As time went by, I felt calmer and more settled. I reconnected with a gentle, quiet man I worked with in the early 1970s who always enjoyed stopping by Mom and Dad's house to enjoy a cup of coffee or two. We shared important history. In time, I learned how to dance in the rain and appreciate all the goodness in my life. I loved having my own rep firm, and in 2010, I celebrated my 10th anniversary as a business owner. The office supply business was brisk, and I knew I was in the right spot. That same year, 2010, Dr. Jerry Buss was enshrined in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame as a contributor. Chapter 11, Courage and Discovery. Something is either easy or impossible. Salvador Dali. It is said that with age comes wisdom, but I still felt incomplete and not all that wise either. I had never stopped asking the adoption questions, especially about my birth mother. Does she ever think of me? What day is her birthday? Do I look like her? My life had been both full and empty at the same time. My new life was humming along, so even after receiving some general non-identifying information in 1991, I didn't take specific action to learn more about my biological parents. Years of therapy had taught me how to forgive my birth parents, but I was never expected to forget them. And now that both my parents had passed away, I no longer worried that I might hurt their feelings if I began searching in earnest for my birth parents. For my 40th birthday back in 1993, a friend gave me the gift of an hour with an astrologer. I provided my birth date and time to him before the visit. Dale was an odd but interesting middle-aged man with long fingernails. He lived in a tiny, messy apartment in a downtrodden part of Phoenix, which made me more than a little bit nervous. He had printed a copy of my natal birth chart, and within the first 5 minutes of our session, he asked, "You're adopted, aren't you?" When I said yes, in a private adoption at birth, he showed me exactly where on my chart the signs and planets told him that was so. He told me I was resourceful and had an active life full of change. He encouraged me to eat more greens, drink more water, and fill my wardrobe with basic black, not red, as my power color. He told me my voice was attractive and could easily be a source of income. There was so much revealed in that 1 hour, it would take an entire chapter of this book to detail it all. But he ended the session by telling me to never forget. Balance is the strongest force. I visited a psychic in Sedona at about the same time, providing her with my birth date and time too. She told me my mother always thought of me, but that my father had been killed in a tragic accident. There is no doubt that receiving my non-identifying information in 1991 triggered something within me, and I was trying in any way I could to find a relative, but, as usual, after getting nowhere, I would give up on the whole idea, put it away, and move on. Yet my adoption was always in the back of my mind. In 2017, I saw an ad on television for Ancestry.com. Give the gift of ancestry. I decided to jump in. I ordered the DNA kit, followed the instructions, kissed the package as I mailed it, and waited for the results. There had been so many disappointments in my search, but this time, with science as my ally, I felt more confident in my endeavor. When I received notification from Ancestry that my membership was active, I logged onto their website for the results of my DNA test and clicked on the DNA Summary tab. The ethnicity results stated that I was mostly English and German, exactly what my birth parents had written in my non-identifying information. I was happy about the confirmation, particularly the English part. It reminded me of my trip to the English village of Bovie Tracy with my friend Anne, and how excited she would have been to go on this new ancestral journey with me. The next step on the Ancestry website was to click on the View All DNA Matches tab, which opened up a list of people. I hoped there might be a sibling or a parent, but no such luck. However, staring right at me at the top of the list was Susan, who was described as a first cousin. We shared 855 centimorgans, whatever that meant. She was the only one shown as a first cousin. The next two closest cousins shared 616 centimorgans and 444 centimorgans, respectively. That made Susan my closest known relative, other than my son, of course. Wow! A female relative, a new person I am linked to genetically. There was no photo of her, and she did not build a family tree, public or private, so on June 23, 2017, I sent her an email through Ancestry. Below is a shortened version of my initial correspondence. Hello, Susan. I just received my results from Ancestry DNA, and it shows that you are a first cousin match. I was adopted at birth and do not have any identifying information other than having some English blood, and that my birth parents, who were each 20 years old, came out to California and did not tell their parents they were going to have a baby. My grandfather was a professor, but I don't have any last names, states, etc. My birth father was born in Utah, and my birth mother was born in Idaho. They would be in their 80s now, as I am in my early 60s. If any of this rings a bell, please let me know. Thanks. In anticipation, I check my Ancestry emails every day for a few weeks. No response. There was no way to tell if Susan was still a member of Ancestry or not, so I didn't know if my message had been read. I tried again 6 months later, sending an email to her on New Year's Eve. Hello, Susan. I am new to Ancestry.com and received my results stating that you are a first cousin match. Have tried sending messages, but no response. Please confirm if you are interested in emailing. Thanks. I checked again every day for a few weeks, but still no response. I began to question my method of inquiry. Was it the way I wrote the email? Did I offend her? Does a person get nervous when an adoptee is searching like this, trying to make contact? I had invested time and money in Ancestry, and I was getting nowhere. But then I realized I was putting all my effort into contacting this one person, Susan, who was the only one listed as a first cousin. I decided to send emails to anyone listed as a second cousin, hoping someone might know someone who might have a clue. Here is an example of an inquiry sent on January 15th, 2018. Hello. I hope this won't be an imposition, but I see that we share a DNA match as cousins. I am adopted and do not have any names of my birth parents, only non-identifying information, but I am trying to find out more. Would you be interested in helping me? My birth mother was born in Idaho and was 20 years old and married to my birth father, who was born in Utah, who was also 20 years old when I was born in 1953 in Los Angeles. It was a private adoption through a physician, so the information is very little. But I do know that my birth parents both had siblings. Thank you. Most of the emails I sent either went unanswered or the respondents were unable to help. There was one person, however, a second cousin, Frank, who sent a reply 3 weeks later. He promised to look for clues I had given in my email and invited me to view his family tree and encouraged me to stay in touch. My membership was finally paying off. I found someone who wanted to help me and generously invited me to view his family tree. As I became more familiar with how to search, I started looking more closely at my DNA shared matches tab. I started to notice that this particular second cousin shared a line of surnames with several others on my list. I figured out that this could be the first part of developing either a maternal or a paternal line. A few months later, on April 17, 2018, I made another attempt to connect with my first cousin, Susan. I noticed the shared DNA matches I had with Susan were different than the ones I shared with my second cousin, Frank. So I was beginning to see a possible maternal and paternal line. I could see I had matches on each side, but I still did not know which side was maternal and which was paternal. I formulated another message to my first cousin, Susan. "Hello, Susan. We are a first cousin DNA match. I am female, born in 1953 in Los Angeles, and was adopted at birth. I am hoping to find out something about my birth family. If you are interested in seeing what connection we may have, please email. Thank you." You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. We are reading the book Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story. This is your volunteer reader, Lee Close. Nearly a year had passed and I still had no response. Should I just give up and go on with my life as before? A feeling of resignation would come over me, but printed on the front cover of my 2018 journal were the words, "Keep calm and carry on." While my search wasn't exactly a war, it did require fortitude. There were three possible reasons for no response from my first cousin, Susan. She's not interested in helping me. She doesn't check her ancestry messages because she only wanted her ethnicity results and was not interested in building a family tree or finding other relatives. She is no longer a member. I was getting discouraged, but in the meantime, I continued my connection with my second cousin, Frank, and wrote another email to him on May 9th, 2018. A shortened version is below. "Hello, Frank. Here's the information from the paper I received from the Bureau of Vital Statistics. It's called Non-Identifying Birth Information, so hopefully there may be some clues for you. Number one, my birth mother was born in Idaho of English descent, was 20 years old at my birth, August 1953, was married to my birth father in 1952, and had completed high school and working as a bookkeeper. She had three sisters. Her parents were divorced. She also had three stepsisters and two stepbrothers. Her father was employed as a game warden. Number two, my birth father was born in Utah of Anglo-Saxon descent, was also 20 years old at my birth, had completed high school and graduated from college with a Bachelor of Science degree in physical chemistry and was employed as a chemist assistant at the college. His father, my paternal grandfather, was a professor. My birth father had a sister and a brother and also a half-sister, half-brother, and a stepbrother. I hope this is helpful. If I only knew what college my birth father attended, it might be a great clue because he graduated quite young, at 20, with a bachelor's degree in science. By the way, I am not on Facebook. Thanks." Frank responded back 2 weeks later and thanked me for the additional information. He told me to keep going and let him know if I found anything that could be a further clue as to how we were related. I responded on May 29th with more of my non-identifying information in hopes that something would trigger his memory. "Hi, Frank. Here's some more information that may help. Both parents are listed as being 20 years old at the time of my birth and were married in 1952. So it stands to reason that each of them was born sometime in 1932 or 1933. And since I will be 65 in August, it also stands that they could possibly be alive and both of them about 85 years of age. The non-identifying information also stated the following. circumstances of placement. Your birth father stated he had no time to raise a child or finances to support a child since he was in graduate school. My birth mother wanted to keep me, but went along with her husband's wishes. My birth father's interest was science, and he wanted to complete his PhD in chemistry and be a good chemist. He must have been one smart cookie to be in graduate school at the age of 20, so perhaps he was either at USC or UCLA, at least for the graduate work. He did not serve in the military, 6 feet tall, 160 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. Frank wrote back a week later and said he would sort through all the information I had given him, wishing me good luck on my search. As I continued to study the shared DNA matches, the two sides became more distinct, but I still didn't know which was the maternal side and which was the paternal side. By the end of June 2018, more than a year had passed since my initial email to my first cousin Susan, who still had not responded. On July 17th, I decided to shorten my email request to her and try again. "Hello, Susan. I live in Arizona, female, 64, and was adopted at birth, and am interested in researching my birth family. If you are interested in helping me, please let me know. Thanks." I logged on to Ancestry a week later, and there was an email from Susan. I couldn't read her message fast enough. She thanked me for contacting her. She said she would love to meet in Phoenix in November upon her return from her summer cabin in the White Mountains. She told me she was an author and encouraged me to look at her website. She said she looked forward to hearing from me and ended her email with, "So I can learn about your life too. God bless you, Susan." It seemed she was as interested in me as I was in her. And the best part? My newfound cousin lived in the northern part of Phoenix, less than an hour away from me. What a bonus! I expected my relatives to live in California where I was born. So this was a fantastic development. But November? 4 more months of waiting? I replied back to Susan the same day. "Thank you for emailing me, Susan. I will definitely purchase your book. Your website is beautiful. I love the picture of the lavender, too. I love lavender and grow several different varieties in my yard. I'd love to chat, so let me know a good time for you." I ordered a copy of her book from Amazon. A few days later, we had a short phone conversation while she was still at her summer cabin. We made plans to meet on November 21st at the Olive Garden restaurant in North Phoenix, near her winter home in New River. She sounded happy to talk to me. Early in August, I received another email from her. "How do you think we may be related as cousins? Do you have any information? Best wishes, Susan." Susan was definitely interested in meeting me. I received her book about her journey with the breast cancer diagnosis and alternative treatment. On the front cover of the book was a photo of Susan, a pretty woman with long blonde hair, just like mine, wearing beautiful turquoise jewelry and holding two feathers. When I opened up the book, just past the copyright on the left-hand side, the right-hand page had a multicolored background. In the center was a large purple and pink heart with the words, "For Jerry," printed in purple ink. Just below his name, printed in white ink, were the words, "This book is dedicated to my beloved brother Jerry Buss, whose glorious love is imprinted forever upon everyone he knew." Her brother is Jerry Buss? The owner of the Los Angeles Lakers? That Jerry Buss? I knew the name, and as I kept reading, I started to have an odd feeling, like a flock of birds before an earthquake. On page 12, she mentioned that her brother Jerry had purchased the Los Angeles Lakers. Okay, so yes, that Jerry Buss. Confirmed. Susan's brother is Jerry Buss. Wow! During the year that passed before Susan responded to my initial email, I researched the meaning of a centum organ, It is a unit of genetic measurement. That was helpful, and I knew that Susan and I shared 855 of them. But, like a detective gathering evidence, I was often thrown off course because I had no relatives upon which to build a base. What I did learn from further research was 3,400 Centimorgans would be a parent, child, or identical twin. 2,500 Centimorgans would most likely be a full sibling. 1,700 Centimorgans could be a half-sibling or an aunt, uncle, niece, nephew. 850 Centimorgans could be a half-aunt, half-uncle, niece, nephew. So with some little-used deductive reasoning from my college days, I concluded, with 855 Centimorgans, Susan was more than a cousin and quite possibly my half-aunt. My non-identifying information from 1991 stated that my birth father had a half-sister. My birth father's half-sister could quite possibly be my half-aunt. If Susan is my half-aunt, then her half-brother, Jerry Buss, could be my birth father. I think I stayed up all night for the next several nights reading everything I could about Jerry Buss, beginning with the sad news that Dr. Jerry Buss, majority owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, passed away on February 18, 2013. Several articles were written immediately after his death. I read as many as I could find. It all fit. His age, his background in science, his PhD in chemistry, his teaching time at USC, and the reason for his preference that the Lakers basketball players referred to him as Dr. Buss. After 65 years on the planet without an answer, it was as simple as this. Dr. Jerry Buss is my birth father. That concludes today's broadcast. Join us on the next program for the continuation of Late for the Buss. This is Lee Close, author of the book and your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you.